Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of May 30th, 2017. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Very well, very well. So, D.R., one of the things I wanted to touch on today is the progress, shall we say, of the Paris Accord. So just to get everyone, I'll set this up in the following way. December of 2015, 192 nations of the world, including the United States, with Secretary Kerry at the time, all came together to sign an agreement called the Paris Accords, or the Paris Agreement, which is basically this kind of loose structure by which the world could proceed to address the issues of climate change. Do you remember that, D.R.?
Yes, a great day when that deal was reached.
Now, Paris, so that thing exists, and we've talked about it, and we'll talk about it again because it's such an important thing. But the Paris, the reason it's called the Paris Agreement is because Paris was the designated city for that biennial, I guess, every 2 years they meet, meeting of all the countries to talk about climate change. And what has happened is that these guys recently met again in the city of Bonn, Germany. So all the people that made agreement, joined the Paris Agreement, got back together. And what they were talking about in Bonn was basically how to implement the Paris Accords, how to specifically, mostly what they were talking about in Bonn as far as the Paris Agreement was how to make transparent the calculations of different countries' carbon reductions. I mean, how do we make it clear so that you know what somebody in a different country did and they all share the same sort of standards of reporting? So did you see anything about the Bonn meeting, DR? What's your take on it?
Yes, there was a great piece in EcoWatch summarizing reports in Bloomberg and Reuters basically saying that, you know, other countries were even more determined to sort of, you know, keep the Paris deal strong in light of uncertainty coming out of the United States. And it will be very, very interesting to see if, in fact, if the United States pulls out of the Paris Agreement, will other countries remain strong in their commitments, or will this cause a sort of domino effect where other major polluters say that, hey, if the United States won't live up to its end of the deal, we don't have to either, and that essentially undermines the advancement that was made 2 years ago in Paris.
Right, and of course, the backdrop is that our current president has been quite critical of the Paris Agreement and says he's going to step out of it, you know, and has threatened to leave it. It turns out that the people, so that's some of the inside baseball is the people in Bonn who are supportive, of course, of the Paris Accord were trying to figure out under the rules and regulations whether they thought it was legal for a country like the United States, which all of a sudden doesn't want to be part of the Paris Accord, whether it was legal for the United States to backtrack on its commitments to carbon reductions. Could the United States, within the framework of the treaty, reduce the promises it has made to for carbon reductions by the year 2030? And of course, again, as backdrop, all of those promises the United States made were based on the President Obama's Clean Power Plan, right, which is in jeopardy and yada, yada, yada. The flip side, I think, is that so the people in Bonn, the climate negotiators in Bonn are trying to figure out if the United States has the legal authority even to back down on its commitments. And in D.C., my understanding is that, you know, Jared and Stevie Bannon are talking about whether or not there is, if the United States left the Paris Accord, would it open the Trump administration up to legal challenges that would tie things up in court, right?
That'd be very, very interesting. Of course, the other issue that I think has been discussed before is whether Trump will go not just pulling out of Paris, but trying to pull out of the 1992 UN Framework Convention on Climate Change, which was sort of, you know, signed, which was in fact signed by a number of different countries, including then President George H.W. Bush, which would have, you know, is widely expected to have a catastrophic effect if the United States pulls out of the overall, you know, basically tries to knock down the foundation upon which Fat Paris was built.
Yeah, well, I think that, so as a climate hawk, I've been carefully following the Trump misadministration's discussions about whether or not they're going to be in the Paris or stay in the Paris Accord. And it comes in and out of the news, right? There was a week where they were going to decide on Tuesday and all get together on Tuesday, and the meeting fell apart somehow. And then a week later, they were all going to get together and do it. It seems as if we're now, you know, 3 months into the administration, and Trump has not decided to either fish or cut bait on the Paris thing, right? What do you make of that?
It's very interesting. Obviously, there have been a number of newspaper editorials across the country urging, you know, Trump not to abandon the Paris Climate Agreement. The Vatican apparently has been very, very vocal about not about the United States not backing out of the Paris Climate Agreement. There is apparently a report by Coral Davenport of the New York Times discussing the idea that supposedly Trump is trying to get Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader, to basically lead the charge to sort of pull the United States out of the Paris Climate Agreement, and Mitch McConnell is apparently saying no, this is your decision, Mr. Trump. I'm not, you know, take this cup, let it pass for me, basically.
There's been a lot of people voicing support for the Paris Accord. I would have to say that our governor here in Massachusetts, Governor Baker, has recently put up a letter sending a letter to Washington, D.C., presumably to the Oval Office, saying, "Dear Mr. Trump, please stay in the Paris Accord," right? Did you see that?
Yes, and I believe that letter was co-signed by, I think his name is Phil Scott, the governor of Vermont, saying, you know, do not abandon the Paris Agreement. And again, you know, we cannot forget the hand of politics here. These guys, Baker, you know, some of the others who are basically saying don't pull out of Paris, these guys remember how catastrophic it was when Bush pulled out of Kyoto. Mm-hmm. That caused a tailspin for Bush in terms of his popularity. Mm-hmm. It was just a gigantic mess for the Bush administration. And considering the stakes now, it would probably be an even bigger mess for Trump if he abandoned Paris.
But you would think that, I think that Charlie Baker has less concern about President Trump's future, which we'll get to in a minute, as his own. I thought the point you were going to make was that being here in Massachusetts, Charlie Baker needs to know, he wants everyone to know that he's in favor of the Paris Accord. He's not a crazy nut job like the guy in Washington, D.C., and that Baker here in Massachusetts is all for the Paris Accord.
It is a very interesting point, although I don't see how Baker and Scott would be able to avoid criticism along the lines of, okay, you're for staying in Paris, but are you being as aggressive as you could be?
That's the leverage, yeah.
You know, it's one thing to be, supportive of staying in Paris, but with regard to Governor Baker and Governor Scott, are they willing to come out for strong carbon pricing in their states? Mm-hmm. There's been a big discussion in Vermont, and it's being resisted by Governor Scott's own party to try to have carbon pricing. It's been demonized and it's demagogued. People would have, for all the respect that people have of Governor Scott in Vermont for coming out in favor of Paris, I think they would even have more respect if he stood up to the more retrograde elements of his own party and called for a strong carbon pricing in the state. That's real leadership.
I mean, that's not to offend anyone in our audience, but I oftentimes see cars with bumper stickers that say, you know, save Tibet, right? Free Tibet. And it's like, Tibet's so far away, you don't have to worry about it. So to your point, it's like Scott and Baker can say, oh, we got to stay in the Paris Accord because that's way far away, not really touches the immediate thing, when if they were really on it.
Leadership begins at home.
Exactly. Yeah, I agree. I agree. So I think that we'll mention in a few minutes that there is a carbon lobbying day in the Massachusetts State House on June 13th. So if you want to go try and get to Governor Baker and make DR's point to him that if he's going to sign this nice, nice letter, you ought to have a carbon tax here. Anyway, let me come back. Let me just say this about the Trump administration and the whole Paris Accord. No American can avoid the debacle of this Russian gate thing, right? The Russian, it's just, I mean, I just sometimes wonder if Trump is so consumed with worrying about his various scandals that he can't bring his, you know, 30-second attention span around to the Paris Accord. And maybe that's a good thing. I mean, maybe he's just hamstrung and doesn't even want to bother thinking about anything other than, you know, what Mike Flynn had for dinner last night.
You mean he's so concerned about Putin that he can't think about Paris?
Exactly. And I guess the other point as far as the Paris Accords go is that there was this interesting editorial in the New York Times in which the New York Times pointed out that India and China, which, of course, between India, China, and the United States, I think are the biggest CO2 emitters in the world, right? India, just by virtue of its huge population, even though at a per capita rate, they're quite low, right? They, and both India and China have made dramatic strides in installing clean, renewable power, not the least of which is because their cities are choked with pollution, right? Beijing and Calcutta are just terrible places from a pollution standpoint. So, and that, but the point the editorial made is that India and China are way ahead of their Paris commitment goals, right? They find it much easier to do than anyone expected. And so here they are, they're closing in, not quite closing in on the 2030 goals, but they're doing quite well. Go ahead.
And the point is, China and India are laughing at the United States as they do this. They are looking at Trump, and they're seeing a gigantic fool who is in effect, by virtue of his inaction on climate, transferring wealth to China and India. He's making China and India great again, not the United States. He is literally forfeiting potentially billions, if not trillions of dollars in clean energy, in leadership on clean energy, in innovation on clean energy to China and India. And they're looking at this guy and they're thinking, what the hell were the 62 million Americans who voted for him thinking? They basically put money in our pockets, not their own.
Well, and it's more than money. I mean, it's global political leadership, right? And we've talked about this before. I mean, China is going to come out of this being the one with the soft power, because they're appear to be the sane ones in the world. But there you go. So I think that I guess the take-home lesson is that the Paris Accords, which are, you know, they may be weak, they may be, you know, fledgling, but they are, people are committed to it. And despite the United States under Mr. Trump's fooling around and not wanting to participate, I think that the Paris Agreement process is strong and will continue to go. Do you think so?
I definitely hope so. I definitely hope other countries continue to maintain their commitments, because if those other countries do so, they will also advance ahead of where the United States is. And people are going to look back, future generations are going to look back and say, how could a country known for innovation blow it on this level? How could a country that put a man on the moon blow it on this level?
I agree with you. So anyway, let me just say that remind folks, I'll put up a link on the blog. It'll be on the MCAN website, MCAN Facebook page and whatnot. June 13th, there's a lobbying day at the Massachusetts State House. If you've never lobbied before, it is not scary. It's fun. There's other people that you can go with. You learn. You meet kindred spirits. It's a good deal. If you can make it June 13th, go down there and lobby for carbon pricing here in Massachusetts. So, DR, we'll put up links to everything that we talked about and most of what we talked about on the blog. It's at massclimateaction.org/blog. There'll be a link on the Facebook page at /MassClimateAction. You can click through and listen to us on SoundCloud. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Overcast, SoundCloud, Podbean, all those other, all the usual suspects there. So, D.R., we're going to close where we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So, D.R., thank you so much for being here.
Thanks.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.